It's good to meet you, Martin. Another person from Hopkins, and there's not many of us out there.
No, there's a whole lot more cows than writers, I'm sure.
Yeah, we've got to get some of those cows writing as well. So Hopkins is a tiny little, well, let's see, it's a village.
Yes.
Between Grand Rapids and Kalamazoo, pretty much the halfway mark. So are you a native of Hopkins?
Actually, I was born and raised in Byron Center, which 50 years ago was pretty rural.
Yeah.
And then I got a chance, because growing up, I was sure I was a city kid. I was sure that I wanted nothing to do with the country. And then I spent a couple of years living in the city and realized that I like elbow room. I like neighbors at a distance. When you need to talk to people, there's people around. Go to a local coffee shop, get to know your neighbors, but not always 15 feet away.
And you can always talk to those cows.
Good
listeners. So you're a science fiction writer. Why that genre? What was it that drew you to that?
I almost can't answer that question because it's been about as long as I can remember. I mean, sometimes I dabble in mystery, a little fantasy, but essentially I grew up in a science fiction age. I grew up with the Apollo program. And so I grew up with this concept of we're going to space, we're going to space, we're going to space. Well, then of course our Apollo program petered out and the shuttle program went to the edge of space, but that still is the original inspiration I'm pretty sure that had me going. I grew up with all these Apollo artifacts and everything in the house from my older brothers. It just, for me, that was always where we were going.
When did you start writing? As a child already? Or when did you discover your talent for words?
I have been writing or telling stories before I could write for literally as long as I remember. When my brother Steve went to college, he got a typewriter as a graduation gift. And I was fascinated that this thing could make real books. And so here I am, 5 years old. I can't even reach the tabletop hardly. So I pulled that great big typewriter down on my lap, and I've been typing that way ever since. So I've been telling stories almost as long as I can read or even longer. Professionally, I lacked persistence. I got a rejection or two at 13 or 14 and thought, I can't do this. I want to, but I can't. And then I learned to program. And programming comes very naturally for me. Programming is a good job field. I like it. And so I got distracted. And I'd try again 10 years or so and get some rejections, and I give up. Eventually, in my late 40s, I tried again. I had, again, some rejections, but I tried a little harder, figuring I haven't given this really what it takes. But I had just about completely given up again. And my last submission was to the Writers of the Future contest, which has a quarterly deadline. The story had just come back from one magazine. So I said, well, it's the end of the quarter. This is my last chance. I'm sending it out to this contest. And then I gave up and went back to programming. 3 months later, the contest calls me and tells me my story is a finalist out of thousands of entries for that quarter. And I said, oh, maybe I should reconsider this. And then a month after that, they call me to give me the bad news that I wasn't one of the three winners for that quarter, but that Jerry Purnell loved my story. Jerry Purnell, with his partner Larry Niven, have written practically all of my favorite books in the science fiction field.
Wow, that had to feel good.
Yep. And that was when I said, it's time to give up giving up.
I love it.
And that's sort of a message I now try to give to new writers is, rejection's part of it. Succeeding, a big part of it is, just keep taking the rejections and keep trying.
And they can be very subjective, too.
Oh, and the editors try to tell us that. Sometimes it's, I just had a story like this just last month.
Right.
Yours is great, but I can't do two of those in a row.
Persistence really, really matters. So congratulations, Martin, because you've won awards, well, one recently, and it's hardly the first. So tell us about the awards that are piling up on your shelf.
Well, my most recent one was the Analog Magazine Analytical Laboratory, they call it, which everybody abbreviates ANLAB because it's such a tongue twister, which is basically their reader's choice. They have actually five categories now, one of which is for novelette, which is basically a mid-range story. And my story, Racing to Mars, won this year for Best Novelette of 2015.
Are you considering at all making that novelette into a novel?
Well, as a matter of fact, that is exactly one of the projects I'm currently at work on. Bain Publishing has looked at my work in the past and has pretty much said, you're writing stuff like we like. You need to turn in a novel that will be along these lines, but now you need to add some depth. You need to add more subplots because there's a big difference between 17,000 words and 100,000 words. Huge difference. And so that's one of the projects I'm at work on.
Now, your main character in Racing to Mars is female. I'm always fascinated when a writer makes the choice to write in a gender other than your own, because that's challenging. Writing is challenging enough, but what went behind that choice?
I wish I could answer. For me, it's almost never a conscious decision. I start having an idea for a story, and a line comes to me, and the voice of that line becomes the protagonist. And this story is actually one of my Carver and Ames series, I call it. It's about Captain Nick Ames of a Mars Cycler, basically a ship that orbits to Mars and back on a repeated circle, but never actually lands. It's just delivering loads that land and come back and so on. And I've got several stories with those two characters. Nick Ames is a very difficult captain, perfectionist, bad with people, horribly bad with people. Carver, his first officer, is the one who's good with people. He acts as his buffer and helps to keep people from getting to the point of mutiny. And so I knew this was a Carver and Ames story, but the Carver and Ames stories are generally told from the point of view of some other person interacting with these characters, or from Carver's point of view interacting with Nick. And when I sat down to start this story, I knew it was going to be the first voyage of the Aldrin. And I needed to have somebody that I already knew from my notes that Carver and Ames and several people on the crew knew each other. I needed an outsider to represent the reader coming into this story and learning things. And I came up with an idea that it would be a doctor, and I had the concept that there was going to be a medical element at the core of the story, so it had to be a doctor. And when I sat down to start writing, the first voice in my head was this Dr. Constance Baldwin. And she started speaking to me, and I said, okay, I need to learn this character. I need to figure out what she's up to. I based her roughly in future Michigan so that I could give her some grounding that I was familiar with. So I might not be a doctor, I might not be a woman, but at least I am in a familiar territory. So I've got some parts of her I can latch onto. And then from there, I had to say, okay, I need to learn enough medicine to at least make it sound plausible. And I need to think through this character and how she ended up here and what sort of things led her to this. And I tried to come up with something that seemed plausible, but not typical.
You know, as I started reading Racing to Mars, one of the first things that popped into my mind in the opening scenes is the anti-vaxxers, people who are against vaccinations, because there's something similar going on there with the characters, that there's a character that is absolutely resisting a very necessary type of an injection. Did you have that in mind, taking some of our controversial issues of today and putting that into your work of the future?
I want to congratulate you. This story's been out more than a year now, I think roughly a year. And I expected to hear people ask that question from day one. You are literally the first. That no one, even my first readers who read it before I sent it out to the magazine, nobody picked up on that, and nobody's picked up on it since. I expected to get some very irate mail from some of the anti-vax people. Not a one has picked up on that.
I'm surprised. Yeah. Because some of his arguments were very typically those that you hear from people who are against vaccinations.
Yep. And I did not intentionally put that in. When it was done, however, after I read it, I said, what did I do? Am I going to get hate mail for this? But the story was what the story was. I couldn't change it. In fact, it worked so well as a plot device that you couldn't pay me to change it. It was a necessary part of this story.
Well, and you want conflict. Controversy isn't a bad thing either.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that no one has picked up on, including when I read it the first couple of times, it took me 3 times reading my own story to pick this up. I'll confess, I've never read the book, but when I was growing up, I saw a movie of Captains Courageous that just thrilled me because I like sailing ships. To me, they're the starships of their day. And it just thrilled me, that story. And I sit there and read Racing to Mars now and say, did I just write Captains Courageous in space? You've got the difficult captain. You've got the spoiled brat kid, a little older, and you've got the person on the crew who believes in the kid and believes that this kid has potential he doesn't even know. Did I just tell the same story? Potentially, subconsciously, these things happen to us, but I doubt Kipling would have any objection to it because it's a pretty different setting and a pretty different
cast
of characters.
Yes, I'd say so. I'd say so. Is there a way that people can access this story online, or do we have to wait for it to come out in print? Or
I would have to do some research, honestly, to answer that. I don't think it's available online right now, but it might be. Sometimes when there's a story that is in award consideration, Analog will make it publicly available. And also, they pick one story per issue to make publicly available. I don't think this was one, but I'd have to check. So right now, back issues of Analog are the only place where I know to find it.
Okay.
I have another one, which actually was a Nebula Award nominee this year, Today I Am Paul. That one is on Clark's World. Clark's World keeps all of their stuff publicly available. They still manage to sell a lot of subscriptions and issues, so it's working for them economically. I don't know how, because stories are there online for free.
And you've got an extensive website, so people can read some of your work on that as well. What's your website?
MartinLShoemaker.com. Shoemaker.space should redirect to that, and it's easier for people to remember.
And EvilMartin.com.
And EvilMartin.com.
Tell us about Evil Martin.
All right. Eventually, I won Writers of the Future, but between that first finalist and winning, I became a very active member of the forum where we help each other out with reading stories and saying, here's what works in the contest and here's what doesn't and so on. And one of my mantras to try to get people back on work is write. That sometimes we distract ourselves, and sometimes we need to, but sometimes we distract ourselves because we're afraid of taking that next step in the story. But sometimes I was the one distracting people, and that became Evil Martin. When I was posting jokes and videos and such that were basically encouraging bad habits as opposed to being out and writing, I became Evil Martin. Evil Martin is the one who tempts people when he maybe knows something that's coming up in the contest that hasn't been officially announced yet because I have my sources. And so pretty much he became one of the most popular members of the forum, more popular than me, actually. When people see the Evil Martin face show up, they know something's coming.
Oh, that's fun. And you also work as, you mentioned programming before, you work as a software developer when you're not writing. How do the two intersect from both directions? One helps the writing and the writing helps the other. Talk about that a little bit.
The writing helps the software because I think one of the big failures we have as a software development community is we're weird. We're geeks. We are very, very invested in this technology, and we don't always think like regular people do when they see things that for us, what we think of as simple and obvious is not what regular people will see. And frankly, we're wrong because there's a tiny fraction of us for a huge number of users. So understanding and remembering how different people see things in the world is a valuable programming skill. The other direction gets a little more complicated. David Farland is the coordinating judge for Writers of the Future, and he is also a New York Times bestselling writer himself, and he's a phenomenal writing teacher. And in his writing lessons, he talks about what he calls transport. He thinks that this is a big part of what people want in any genre of literature, is they want to be immersed in an experience that's different from their day-to-day life. And he talks about three kinds of transport. There's emotional transport, which is psychology, getting inside the heads of your characters, making characters that the reader can really believe these are real people. And he talks about sensory transport, basically description, describing your world so believably that the reader can see that it's around them. It's in their heads. They can see it. They can taste it. And last, he talks about intellectual transport, which what we in the science fiction community tend to call world building. You make a consistent, logical, believable world so the reader believes, at least for the duration of a story, this could happen. And he says, if you have any one of those, you're going to sell stories. If you have any two of those, you're going to have a career. And if you have three, you're going to have a best-selling career because you've managed to all the tricks it takes to make a reader believe this story. He says, I am very good at the intellectual transport because when he walks into my world, all the pieces fit. They all work together. They all go together. That's what I do as a programmer every day. I take a bunch of intellectual pieces and connect them together and then turn that into a representation in code. So I think that 30 years as a programmer has unintentionally been training me to be not just a writer, but specifically a science fiction writer, where the worlds we build are a lot different. So you can't rely on the reader understanding everything. You have to make sure that the pieces are there, and you have to know how to do it ahead of time. So you're not just dumping a bunch of information on, but you're doing it little bits at a time. So when a piece of information becomes crucial, the reader already knows it.
That makes absolute sense. Well, thank you for coming in, Martin. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Racing to Mars. Congratulations.
Thank you.